It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We explore developments in litigation the State Department of Justice is pursuing with Attorney General Josh Call, starting with Wisconsin joining dozens of states suing social media giant Meta. You can be part of the conversation at any point by asking a question or sharing your comment at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Attorney General Josh Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network. Attorney General Josh Call, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yes. So you and 41 other attorneys general are accusing Meta of violating state consumer protection laws and the federal Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. Why do you think Meta misled people and allegedly concealed harm suffered by young users of its platforms like Instagram and Facebook?
Well, we've alleged that Meta has made huge profits as a result of the actions that it's taken. Meta benefits financially when people, and in particular young people, remain on its social media platforms like Instagram and Facebook for extended periods of time. And we've alleged that there are a number of features that Meta has in place that effectively keep young people hooked on its platforms. In addition to that, Meta, we've alleged, didn't want that information to get out, information about the harms that its products cause to kids. Because certainly a lot of people, if they were aware of that data, would take action based on it. I think a lot of parents would be concerned about what we've alleged. And instead, Meta purported that its products were safe for kids. And we believe that companies like Meta have an obligation, and in fact, state law provides that obligation, to provide accurate information to people about the harms and benefits of products.
Looking at the coordination of this multi-state suit, how much input do you have in lawsuits like this one in which 33 states are involved in suing Meta?
We work together with other states on a variety of different types of cases. One really prominent recent example is in cases involving the opioid epidemic, where states across the country work together to hold opioid companies accountable and to recover resources for communities in their states. Likewise here, this is a multi-state effort where representatives of AG's offices from around the country have been involved. And in any case like this, usually what happens is there's a committee that's formed to sort of lead the day-to-day effort. But each state, if it wants to, has the opportunity to provide input about the direction of things, and where there are disagreements, of course, those get worked out between the states. And then at the end of the day, deciding whether to join the suit or not is a decision that each state needs to make for itself. Given the significance of this issue and how committed we are at the Department of Justice to doing what we can to keep kids safe, the decision to join this suit was straightforward. And we believe it's critical that we hold Meta accountable for the actions that have been alleged here.
There is critique that this is rare bipartisan support in the moment for a lawsuit on both the state and federal level. How could lawmakers united in their interest to regulate big tech over protection of children be convinced to cooperate on other issues?
One of the things that I think is really remarkable about the work that AG's offices around the country do is that we actually work together in a bipartisan fashion on a number of different issues. Protecting consumers shouldn't be a partisan issue. Protecting public safety shouldn't be a partisan issue. And what we've been able to do is recognize that by working together, we can achieve better outcomes for our states. We're able to pool our resources, and we're able to share thoughts on strategy as well as information that we obtain. And to get better results because of that. Obviously, in politics, the partisanship has become a hindrance to making progress. And I think looking at the example that we've seen here and in other actions, as I mentioned, the opioid cases are a good example of this. You can see the difference we can make for Wisconsinites and Americans by working collaboratively.
What guardrails would you like to see put in place to protect children from being exposed to addictive online practices?
Well, as we move forward in this case, there'll be hopefully more discussion about the potential remedies. You know, right now we've just recently filed the suit. But that being said, that there are a few sort of baseline principles that are going to shape how we hope to see this resolved. I want to make sure that we are ensuring that there are protections in place to keep young people safe as they're using social media platforms. There are a lot of benefits to using social media, but recognizing what potential harms are out there and how social media can cause harms to mental health and kids' well-being is a critical part of designing appropriate solutions. It's also critical that accurate information is being provided. You know, I, as a parent myself, my kids are in fourth and first grade. We make all sorts of decisions about how we keep our kids safe. And we provide information to kids about how to stay safe, you know, look both ways before you cross the street, for example. Likewise, with social media, this has become a huge part of everybody's life, including the lives of young people. And ensuring that parents and young people themselves have the information that they need to make good decisions for themselves and their families is vital. And that's one of the things that we want to make sure comes out of this as well.
We're talking about recent litigation and activity with the head of the State Department of Justice, Attorney General Josh Call. You can join in with your questions and comments. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim in River Falls. Hi, Jim. What is your question?
Good morning. Thanks for having the program. I was just wondering, with the officials that submitted a slate of false electors for the 2020 elections. I know some states are pursuing criminal investigations into those people that have done that. And I'm just wondering where the state of Wisconsin is with that, because I know we had our own very own group that did that here. And seems like that was an illegal activity should be prosecuted.
Jim, thanks for the question. Attorney General.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Jim. My view is that anybody who committed crimes with the goal of trying to overturn the results of any election needs to be held accountable. Now, we generally don't comment on investigations or potential investigations that the Wisconsin Department of Justice is conducting. But what I can say is that I fully support the ongoing federal efforts to investigate and prosecute people for conduct relating to the insurrection on January 6th. From what I have seen, the federal investigation led by Jack Smith appears to be moving swiftly and not only has resulted in charges against former President Trump, but also has led to several unidentified co-conspirators being indicted. And so I expect that we will see further action as a part of that federal investigation. Obviously the trial against President Trump will be moving forward as well. And then I think it's important to note that a couple of things. One is that evidence from federal investigations, with certain exceptions, but generally speaking, can be used in connection with state prosecutions. And so it's certainly possible that there would be evidence from the federal investigation here that's relevant to decisions that DAs make about charging here. But also that it's important that when there are investigations going forward, that you don't have several competing investigations into the same facts, which can undermine ongoing investigations. So those are a few things that are relevant here. But the bottom line is that anybody who committed crimes to try to overturn the results of an election should be held accountable.
Turning to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, last week, a Dane County judge temporarily blocked the removal of Megan Wolf as Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator by Republican lawmakers. What effect will keeping Wolf in that role have on statewide elections?
Well, that order is going to help us ensure that there is stability as we move forward in our election system. We are heading into a presidential election season. And having our chief election officer in the state, having it clear to everybody who that is and having stability there is going to be vital to protecting people's right to vote as we move into the election. Now, it's unfortunate that we're in this situation after the election commission chose not to appoint a new administrator. It was clear that state law allowed Megan Wolf to remain on as administrator. When the Senate decided it was going to potentially take action, I sent a letter to legislative counsel making clear that under state law, Megan Wolf is able to remain in that position. Legislative counsel itself put out a memo confirming that position. And despite that, the Senate took a vote purporting to remove Megan Wolf from office. So we filed suit that same day because we wanted to make sure that there was clarity. With the Senate's action, we believed created a real risk that there would be confusion about whether Megan Wolf remained empowered to act as the administrator. And in response to our suit, rather than defending the action the Senate took to attempt to remove Megan Wolf, the defendants said that the vote was symbolic and acknowledged that Megan Wolf remained as the administrator. So all of this confusion that was created was really created unnecessarily by the Senate here. Now, there's ongoing litigation. The Senate and the defendants in the case have now raised a new argument asserting that the Election Commission is obligated to appoint somebody new as administrator. And there will be litigation on that issue as we move forward. But for now, at least, we've got certainty about who is running the Election Commission, and this litigation will resolve any lingering questions relating to this issue.
Just a timeline there. GOP leaders are now asking the court to order the Elections Commission to appoint a new administrator no later than tomorrow, November 1st. What is your response?
Well, the litigation is ongoing, and certainly the court will weigh in as requests are made. But it's certainly not unusual for there to be requests made in litigation that aren't consistent with what ends up happening. But look, the legislature created a bipartisan six-member commission, and it intentionally created it with three Democratic appointees and three Republican appointees. And it's not going to be unusual for that committee to split 3-3. There was discretion given to the Election Commission to decide what actions to take. Now for the legislature to come in and say that somebody has to be appointed by a particular date is just not consistent with the way that commission was set up. So, again, we will see how things play out in litigation, but I'm confident that Megan Wolf, as now a court order has confirmed, is able to exercise her authority as the administrator. And I believe she's going to continue to be able to do that.
Attorney General Josh Call with us to talk about the latest on litigation taken up by the State Justice Department. Join in the discussion with your thoughts. You can ask a question. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Attorney General Josh Call on a range of issues involving State Department of Justice casework. And you can field your question at any point to the Attorney General. Share what's on your mind. The number to be part of the discussion is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. This month, you filed a brief on behalf of Governor Evers asking the state Supreme Court to declare unconstitutional the state's legislative maps and institute new voting maps. What would you and the governor like to see in new district maps?
Well, very simply, we want to see fair maps in the state of Wisconsin. We believe that the maps that are in place currently are unconstitutional, and we've raised two arguments in our brief as the state Supreme Court directed as to why the maps are unconstitutional. But for years now, more than a decade, we have had maps that were designed by legislators to protect their own power and to entrench themselves in power. That's not how our system was set up to work. So we would like to see maps that empower voters and that are responsive to the vote. So if you have an election that statewide is 50-50, you expect to have a roughly even result in the legislature. What we've had instead are very lopsided legislative majorities. Likewise, if you have a year that's good for Democrats, you expect to have that reflected with more Democrats in office. And if you have a year that's good for Republicans, we expect to have more Republicans in office. So that alone is critical here. And I would add, this is part and parcel with the previous issue we were talking about, which is the attack on the administration of the Election Commission and so many other attacks we've seen on our voting rights recently. We need to be protecting our freedom to vote and empowering voters in Wisconsin. And whether that's through fair maps or defending the fair administration of elections or expanding rather than restricting access to voting, there are a lot of steps we can be taking to empower our voters rather than to entrench politicians into office. And redistricting is a great example of that.
So the Wisconsin Supreme Court agrees to hear a legal challenge to the state's legislative maps. The court is scheduled to hear oral arguments on November 21st. How do you anticipate this case will play out?
Well, the arguments on the 21st, I think, will provide a lot of insight into what's likely going to lie ahead. As I mentioned, there are a few challenges to the constitutionality of the maps that the court is considering, and I assume the court will address those issues first. Now, if the court finds that the maps are unconstitutional, then there's going to need to be a remedy. There are going to need to be new maps adopted. We have advocated for that process to move quickly. Wisconsinites already had to vote in the 2022 elections with the maps that we believe were unconstitutional. And they shouldn't have to vote in the 24 elections with unconstitutional maps as well. So it's my hope that the court will adopt a process, if the maps are found to be unconstitutional, that leads to new maps being put in place quickly. And the court can do that in a variety of ways. It could appoint somebody to oversee a process, or it could ask the parties to submit maps. But whatever option is taken, again, it's my hope that the process moves quickly so that voters are once again empowered to select their legislators and not the other way around.
Does the court have the power to address these maps without reopening their decision in Johnson versus Wisconsin Election Commission, the case that set our state's current electoral maps?
Well, the issues that have been raised in this case are fairly different from the issues that were raised in Johnson. And the court was adopting a map. And so it was acting sort of in an initial capacity to put maps in place. Mm-hmm. And as you may recall, initially the court actually adopted a different set of maps for the legislature. Mm-hmm. Then the U.S. Supreme Court invalidated those maps, came back, and the court, through a 4-3 vote, adopted the current maps. And Justice Hagedorn, in his opinion, a concurring opinion, basically said, you know, we've run out of time, so we're adopting this. It was almost an adoption of maps by default. But the arguments that are being raised here are different ones that weren't fully addressed or even significantly addressed in the prior case. And so it's our view that the court should take a fresh look at those issues, reassess. And I believe that when the court does that, it's going to find that these maps are constitutionally invalid.
We're talking about recent lawsuits with the head of the State Department of Justice, Attorney General Josh Call. You can join the conversation. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. This month, a Republican-controlled state Senate committee voted to spend tens of millions of dollars on PFAS remediation. What is your response to the Republican approach to addressing the issue with toxic forever chemicals?
Well, first, I'm glad that there's interest in this issue. PFAS contamination is impacting communities around the state and around the country. I have been to northeastern Wisconsin and heard from people who've been impacted by PFAS contamination. There are a number of communities where we continue to learn about PFAS contamination as testing takes place. And it's critical that Wisconsinites have access to safe and clean drinking water. In Wisconsin, in the 21st century, that should be a no-brainer, and it shouldn't be something that folks have to worry about. They certainly shouldn't have to worry that the water that they've been drinking for decades is going to make them sick. That's why we have taken aggressive action to hold companies accountable for PFAS contamination in Wisconsin. Now, it's great that the legislature is getting involved in this, and funding to remediate this problem is really important. What I don't want to see, though, and what I'm concerned about with the proposal that's in front of us, is that the DNR's ability to remedy PFAS contamination is going to be limited. That's bad because it makes it harder to clean up PFAS contamination, but also that the companies that made huge amounts of money by producing and marketing PFAS, that's who should be paying to clean this up. Limiting their liability means shifting that responsibility onto the taxpayers. And that is the last thing I want to see, is taxpayers being required to foot the bill for PFAS contamination. So it's my hope that money will be provided without strings attached, or without allowing companies that were responsible for PFAS contamination to get away with it. I think there's more work that needs to be done before legislation should be enacted.
Meanwhile, there are residents of Peshtigo who have been living off of bottled water for nearly 6 years due to PFAS-contaminated private wells. What would you tell them?
Well, that's right. When I mentioned I was in northeast Wisconsin, I was in Marinette, and I heard from residents in Marinette and Peshtigo and nearby. And folks there are really struggling with the situation. As I mentioned, people are worried about their health, whether the water they drank is going to cause them harm. People are worried about the ability to sell their houses, and they're worried about their kids. We need to make sure that we are taking swift action to address this issue. And again, it's why having strings attached to this legislation is problematic. We shouldn't be doing anything to slow down funding that can go to remediating this harm. We just need the legislature to move forward and provide the resources. The court system takes a long time to play out often, and the litigation efforts that we've had related to this have been ongoing now for a period of time. And ultimately, that's part of the solution. But the legislature can act promptly, and I hope that it does, so that we can get relief to people rather than doing it in a way that's going to potentially allow those responsible for pollution to evade accountability.
Attorney General Josh Call, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Josh Call is Wisconsin's 45th Attorney General and is in his second term. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.